cliffcentral.com. Well, let's get into it. Look who's here. It's the beautiful, the talented, the incredible. I can't believe you. You're like some kind of Renaissance woman. You've just been in a refugee camp. What? Yes. Come on. Is life not exciting enough for you?
No. Always got to have a lot of more spice. You've got to add the spice everywhere. It was a story that most certainly found me.
Hanging around in Algeria?
Yep. In the middle of the Sahara Desert, there's a refugee camp that I knew nothing about. And once I learnt about the Sahrawi people and what was going on there, I couldn't not go.
Catherine Constantinides is with us. It's just after 8 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. It's amazing to me. You've done all of this stuff and you're still so young. And your CV is like 8 or 9 pages long already. It's incredible.
Thank you.
You started your first business at 16?
Yes, I did.
No, let's just catch up with you quickly. Because I first got to know about you when you won that Miss Earth.
Yes.
Nobody knew what Miss Earth was until you won it. And then suddenly it became a big deal. And I think it's because you made it. You worked so hard.
Thank you.
At making it a big deal. You did.
Yeah, no,
you're
look,
still involved with them, right?
Absolutely. So I run the Miss Earth in South Africa, Namibia, Zambia, and Ivory Coast. And my whole thing is to really drive women to take a central role in climate change and sustainability. And for me, that's really important.
Catherine, you could have just been a bimbo.
Yeah, I could have.
Like you could have been, because you're hot enough, you could have just been pretty and dumb and like married some rich guy and then your life would have been perfect. What is all this work you've chosen for yourself?
This is the substance that I want my life to be made of.
Don't get me wrong. I love you for it. I think it's an amazing thing to be such a multi-talented, such a conscientious human being who actually, you give a damn.
But
it could have been so much easier.
Oh, absolutely. And I think about the easier road, but I wouldn't have stories to tell.
Well, where do we even begin with you? First business at 16. At 16... I was watching TV. I was interested in music, in women, in...
Keep it clean.
What?
Keep it clean.
Yeah, I was pretty much like... I was not a particularly smart guy. I mean, at 16, maybe I was reading a lot, but that was the only smart I had. I didn't connect to the world or think about business opportunities or any of that stuff.
You know what? I think that people's lives are really different. And it's amazing because I think when people meet me, they put me in a box immediately. But the reality is that I had to start working when I was young.
Why?
My dad got really ill and I had to become a breadwinner for my family. And so it was something that, I was doing a lot of community work and I wanted to make that sort of where I was going with my life. Mm-hmm. Yes, I wanted to study and I wanted to do law and I wanted to become a lawyer. And that was sort of the path that was sort of pre-planned in my mind. But mm-hmm. at 16, I decided, I was able to do projects and campaigns and do certain things successfully. I was going to make a business out of it. And I think the hardest thing was from a young age, I had to learn to lie well about my age because my age always counted against me because I was
people
young.
Won't take a 16-year-old seriously.
Absolutely. Right. But if they thought I was 20, 22, that was a different story.
And could you get away with that?
Absolutely. I think girls are able to get away with that when they're at that age,
So hang on, what was wrong with your dad?
So my dad's got a very rare disease called ischemia. It's a dementia. Yet it's very different because when you take CAT scans of the brain, literally this disease eats parts of the brain away. So CAT scans from 15 years ago to now.
So what, does your dad think he's a teapot or what's the story?
Well, it's a kind of dementia. So we've had to literally see him wither away. There's things he cannot do. So he was my superhero growing up. He really was.
When did all of this start?
So about 15 years ago. He started getting really ill. And then by the time, then he couldn't work and it just got progressively worse.
So how did you first pick up on this? Because you must have had some telltale signs.
We had no idea what it was. So doctors...
Would he forget things?
He had been in a very bad car accident. We stopped at a car accident when we were quite young. And he got into a taxi and another taxi hit that taxi where he was. But he was trying to pull people out.
Wow.
When we thought that that had an effect.
Yeah.
And it had, but that wasn't the cause of sort of the long-term disease that he had. And he got it very, very young. People get dementias when they're 60 or 70. He got it when he was in his early 50s. So
must be horrible to
it's
deal
been
with.
It's been a very difficult
Your mom, how did she deal with that?
It's been very hard, and it still continues to be very hard.
She's looking after him?
Yes, yes.
That's a full-time job, right?
Absolutely, it's a full-time job. And I think she's the central force. She is where I learned to be strong and to be brave, because I've seen that all my life from her.
So at 16, you didn't do this because you were some kind of entrepreneurial whiz kid. You did it because you had to.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when I was in primary school, I did a small entrepreneurial thing. So I didn't know entrepreneurial because I had a passion for doing that. And only when I started my business, when I was a few years into it, did I realize that what I was doing was social entrepreneur.
Yeah, entrepreneurship. So, yeah,
absolutely. And I think for me, I was very passionate about what I was doing. And
but how
I was
do you,
able to...
Okay, there's so many questions here. Mm. I've got to take it easy with you, otherwise you're going to... I'm exhausted. All right. First things first. You've got this sense of like you need to give back. You didn't have anything, but you wanted to give back already. You say you were involved in community projects and social projects that involved helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also trying to make money because now you're the breadwinner. To find a way to marry those things is really hard. What kind of business was this that you started off?
So initially it started as an events and marketing company. So we started doing events for companies. Mm-hmm. I had started doing events to raise funds for community projects I was working with. And that sort of took off. That became really successful. And corporate started asking me to do projects and campaigns for them. Not realizing how old I was, I said absolutely yes. And I started doing that kind of work. And I was able to, through the work I was doing, to have some kind of opportunity to work with communities, to benefit communities, and to engage with the people I was working with and get them to give back. So that was a key criteria of most of the work I did. I could do work with you and I'd get paid and, you know, it would be a business deal, but you'd have to come and do community projects with me and go out with me to communities when I did X, Y, Z.
What's your dad like now? I mean, is it really bad?
It's really bad. And doctors say it's at the end, but they can never really... God. You know, there's no sort of calendar. You can't
tell.
So
for 15 years, you've watched him wither away.
Absolutely.
You've watched this human being who you loved and looked up to and idolized, and you've seen him become a shell.
Absolutely.
He's just he's an organism now. I mean, does he know who you are? Does he know your mother is?
He knows my mom, and he recognizes us. So he sort of has a sense of belonging when he's with us, but he doesn't talk anymore, and he's not able to really communicate.
Is he bedridden?
He does get up, but there's nothing really more he can do. He gets up, he sits, you put him in the sun during the day. He likes to be in the sun and that kind of thing.
That's so sad. I'm so sorry. What a horrible thing to have to deal with.
It is, but it's what I was dealt.
And you're not bitter about it and angry? Who do you get angry with, I suppose?
That's the thing. I mean, you question all the time. And you are angry because you realize, you remember how larger than life this man was. And to think that a disease can destroy a human being to such an extent is something incomprehensible, even though you live with it each and every day. But
you got brothers and sisters?
Yes. Younger brother and younger sister. My brother actually just turned 22 on Sunday.
Do you feel really responsible for them as well?
I do. I do. And I think that I grew up in a home where our family was a central unit, and the importance placed on family was so powerful that I have a sense of responsibility for them without having been asked to do that.
It just felt like you needed to step in, right?
Absolutely.
And how important is it that you've got like Greek ancestry? Is that a big deal in your family? Or are you one of those, are you a Greek family that's like very into the Greek community? Like you went to Greek schools and you speak Greek at home and you Greek Orthodox.
So there's
Christians
a line here. Because
yeah, I'm just curious because some people are not and some
absolutely.
People are.
So I was brought up in a home full of culture, heritage, the richness of the Greek culture.
Yeah.
wasn't into the Greek community as such. I think there's a clique of a Greek community.
Oh, big time. And a lot of it is very exclusive. In other words, they don't want people in there.
Absolutely. So I'm not part of that group, but... Yeah. In our home, we carried a very rich culture and the history of being Greek. And I mean, I'm firstly South African, then I'm Greek. But I think that the history of my family and sort of how they were displaced hundreds of years ago and landed up in Egypt and keeping their culture and their history was always very important to
them. Tell me the story.
Hundreds of years ago, the Greeks were, the Turks invaded Greece and the Greeks were pushed out. Yeah. So... my family found themselves in Egypt, and from there, eventually, they made their way down to South Africa. So I think that, and then on my dad's side, they're Cypriot. So I've got the best of both Greek islands, Cyprus and Crete.
And Greeks usually don't like the Cypriots, and Cypriots don't really like
the
Greeks.
But I've got the best of both. So I've got that heritage, that culture that's been instilled in us since we were little.
I do think that's interesting because a lot of people would put being Greek before being South African. You've said it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people will say, I'm a Greek.
But this is my home.
You're not, you're South African.
If somebody says, where's home? South Africa's home. Right. Therefore, I'm South African first.
Yeah, it's always bothered me that I don't have an alternate identity. Like I can only be South African. I don't have something else. I'm not English. I'm not Scottish. I'm not French. I'm not German. Nothing. I'm South African. That's all I got.
But
and I'm very happy with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. I find it weird when people have the alternate identity. It's almost like they're holding on to something in case, you know?
The thing is,
in case this one doesn't work out, I got that.
No, the thing is, I'm Greek by heritage, but I could never go and live in Greece. My parents have never been to Greece.
For one, you're blonde. How the hell did that happen?
So the Cretans were the original Greeks were blonde with blue eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
But
The vases, if you look at those paintings,
exactly.
They're all blue-eyed and blonde-haired like you.
But the Turkish invasion sort of...
The Turks raped the women, they became
exactly.
dark.
See, Othello. That's what Othello taught us.
Wow, no, Othello is a totally different thing. That was first of all in Italy, Ben, and second of all, he was a Moor, which means he came from Spain.
There we go, that's my lack of education coming through every time.
Ben didn't do maths and science at school, shame. We're trying to teach him things this morning. So then you get out of school and you've started all these businesses and Miss Earth comes along because that's the first time I heard about you, but I'm sure you'd done lots of impressive things before then. Were you really academic at school?
I had to work really hard at school. I really had to work hard. So, I mean, I did fine. My siblings all used my files and they flew through school.
Are you quite organized? I imagine you keep perfect records.
Yeah, I used to be.
Well, but what's happened? Why have you fallen off the wagon?
I think life's got chaotic, so I'm not as organized as I would like to be, but in my mind, there's lots of boxes.
Huh. Look at you. Impressive. So then this Miss Earth thing, I mean, you didn't run the operation then.
No. It was still run by the international office, which runs in the Philippines. And
These Miss things that happen, and nobody knows the difference between any of them. There's Miss World, Miss Universe, Miss South Africa, Miss Earth, Miss Klerksdorp, Miss Cherry Festival. There's a lot of these. No, there are. There are a lot of these pageants in South Africa, and most of them are bullshit. Some of them are for real. What was it that drew you to the Miss Earth one? Because you could have entered any of the others.
You know what? I think for me, I grew up in a home where we were often outdoors. We were often, we had such a love for the environment around us. And we were really taught to cherish the environment around us. So this for me really resonated. However, I think for me, the bigger journey was not being Miss Earth, but having the opportunity to run Miss Earth afterwards because I saw a bigger picture and I wanted to create a program that I would have wanted to be a part of. I wanted it to be a leadership program. I wanted to be able to give young women an opportunity to learn something that they know nothing about.
Does it drive you crazy when people talk nonsense about climate change or global warming or when you see someone throwing a lit cigarette out into a patch of dry felt, or you see someone dropping papers in the street, or you see someone with water being wasted running down into the stormwater drains. Does that stuff drive you mad?
It does drive me crazy, especially when people say climate change doesn't exist, because I've worked across Africa and I've lived in parts of Africa where you can see the impacts of climate change. You can see how people have been displaced because they can no longer grow food where they used to. They don't have the same waterfall patterns that they used to. And I've actually seen the effects of climate change, and I've seen and met with climate refugees across the continent, so I can actually see the effects. And it drives me crazy because people don't understand how everyone depends on food security, how everyone depends on farmers being able to farm.
And the science is all there.
Absolutely, the science is all there.
But there are deniers. For some reason, I think it's certain industrial lobbies who act in countries like America. Mm-hmm. And bamboozle people. They tell them, oh, well, you know, who could trust science? Science isn't always right. We should believe in Jesus. He knows the truth. And let's keep on pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Yeah. So what do you think the biggest threat to climate in South Africa is, or to food security in South Africa is?
You know, I think that there's a few things. I think our very, very sensitive water system and our very fragile water system is a huge problem. So we are currently going through an energy crisis now. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously that's a huge crisis because we didn't deal with it when we knew what was coming.
Right.
But the water issue is going to be something that, you know, we're not going to have access to water the way we traditionally used to. We're not just going to be able to open a tap because our water resource, I mean, we are actually a water scarce country.
How bad is it? I mean, should we be sitting at home stockpiling water?
You can't stockpile the water. But the thing is, I think we really need to be more conscious of how we're using water, what kinds of choices we make when we're purchasing things that have huge water footprints. And I think we have to become more...
Damon takes 3 shits a day, so he's flushing the toilet a lot. Now, he's got to stop doing that, right? You've got to slow down, Damon. Basically, you're embarrassing all of us and creating huge controversy for the environment and for everyone else. You've got to stop being so selfish. Do you hear me?
Well, it's difficult, you know.
How is it difficult?
Well, I'm a human being. You've got to do what you've got to do.
Not 3 times a day.
No, I do it on average 1.5 times a day on average. So sometimes twice a day, sometimes once a day.
Wow. It's pretty revolting to think about, though. So after the whole Miss Earth thing, you took it over and you started traveling the continent. Now, you've been all over Africa. Whereabouts have you not been that you still want to go? Because you've been to, like, Algeria. I don't know anyone else who's been to Algeria. I've met Daily Maverick reporters who've been to Burkina Faso, Chad, Central African Republic, Gabon, but they've never been to Algeria.
Well, Morocco is definitely off the list now because I've been banned from the country.
How so? What happened?
Because of me going to Algeria and going to the refugee camps and standing in solidarity with Sahrawi people.
Tell me about these people, these Sahrawi people.
So,
who are they?
They are people from a country that was known as the Western Sahara. It's actually a country in Africa that very few people know about. And it's been illegally occupied by Morocco since 1975. And for the last 40 years, they've lived in a refugee community inside Algeria, very close to the Moroccan border. And they have lived there with the hope and the belief that one day they will go home. And yet they're still in the camps. And the UN security meeting at the end of April was supposed to call for a referendum of the Sahrawi people. And that referendum has been sort of delayed every single year since 1991.
So you go over there and you want to see the refugee camp for yourself. Apparently it's enormous.
Yes.
How many people are there?
There are about 165,000 people.
Oh my God.
And they're split between 5 camps.
Who's feeding them? How do they live?
The conditions are really, really very harsh. They get 7 food items dropped by air once a month by World Food Program.
Okay.
World Food Program have done that for 40 years, and it's been the exact same basket of food that they get every single sort of feeding. Water comes in by truck by the UN, and that's every few weeks. And they're able to fill, it's almost like a lilo that each family have.
Mm-hmm.
They fill that with water, and they have to really use that water very wisely. Mm. Nothing grows in the desert, absolutely nothing.
Is it just rows of tents?
Tents and very small little sand buildings. They look like matchboxes. They have been scattered across the desert because there are no trees. As I said, nothing grows. But
what an awful, awful place. Can't these people just leave? Can't they go somewhere? Where can they go?
You know what? They could go somewhere because the Algerian government have given them passports.
Yeah.
Algerian passports.
But they want to go home.
But they want to go home, and that's the biggest thing. They are not prepared to go anywhere else and not reside anywhere else. They want to go home.
And is there no international pressure being put upon Morocco for this?
Absolutely not enough pressure. The African Union is a body without any teeth because they've done absolutely nothing. And Morocco is the only African country not part of the African Union for this specific reason. Yet this story has been kept under wraps. These people are forgotten people of the world because no one speaks about it. And for me, that's still worries me and bothers me intensely. I think Morocco's got too many allies, and I think that, you know, unfortunately, the Western Sahara is very rich in mineral resources. Morocco is not. Morocco has a huge population, yet the Sahrawi people are approximately about 1 million people in total. And the idea that they can actually occupy their land is it's so easy because there's such a small population of people and they've been displaced, so there are very few people that are still in the occupied area, but they torment and torture those people on a daily basis.
So how do you get there? Do you fly into Algiers and then you drive, and it must be miles and miles and miles?
Absolutely. So what
it's
I did
a huge vast country. Algeria is the second biggest country in Africa.
It's massive, and 90% of it is desert, but I had to go via Paris to Algiers. From Algiers, I took a military plane that was chartered into the desert, into Tindouf, which is a military base, and from there we had to drive 2 hours into the refugee camp.
Now, I understand that you care about these people, and you're interested in their plight, and you wanted to see it firsthand, but I do have to, like, what's in it for you? I wouldn't go there. It's all awful. I mean, I feel bad for them, but there has to be some very powerful motivation for you to actually leave South Africa, get on all of these planes, go into this godforsaken desert to visit with people who don't even speak your language.
You know what I think for me? I come from a country where our history shows us that the international community stood in solidarity with South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that put pressure on for our government to change the way that they were doing things, for our government to let Mandela out and to let political prisoners have the rights that they deserved as people. I think that we come from a country that shows us that when the pressure, you know, a pressure cooker, the lid will only stay on for so long. So if enough of us speak up about something that we know is wrong, we can do something.
And you use the power of media, of social media, of being there and being present and bringing back information.
Absolutely.
And to spread the word.
You know, when I started learning about the Sahrawi people and what was happening, I was initially invited to Morocco to speak at a conference. And when I was about to leave and go to the conference, I was told by Durko, if I go, I'm going into a territory that is, you know, it's not safe. It's part of an occupied territory of another country.
So our own Department of International Relations told you, you go there, but it's at your own risk. We can't guarantee your safety. And if something goes wrong, we're not going to bring you out.
Yeah.
So why? So turn around and go. What do you care about the Sahrawi people? Come on.
Knowing what I knew, there's no way I was compelled to go. And for me, it's, I can't know everything I know about these people and understand that these people have been left in 1975 because they're so isolated from the world and do nothing. I could not live with myself
and my
conscience.
So you took the risk. You went in there.
Yeah.
Do they even know how to pronounce your name, these Sahrawi people? Huh?
I taught them.
You taught... What do they call you?
So they called me...
Fairy Godmother. No. What do they call you?
They called me Catherine with a very heavy Arabic accent.
Okay.
But,
Catherine.
I mean, I can't tell you I wasn't
scared.
Are
these attractive people? I mean, in all the dust and the sand and the rocks, do they manage to look after themselves? Are there any hotties there?
Look, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Oh, come on.
And they are such beautiful. The women are covered from head to toe.
Would any of these women win Miss Earth?
Oh, definitely. I had Mutta, who was
Mutta.
My... Yes, she was my...
chaperone.
Protocol officer, because she was an English student. She was unbelievably beautiful.
Hmm.
And it's the beauty of the people is their will to survive, their passion and drive that they will go home. In a desert that they've lived in for 40 years, many of them don't know any other home, and they will not give up the belief that one day they will get to go back.
I'm amazed. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be patronizing about this at all. I am amazed at your willingness to go into an awful place like that and to try and do some good and bring back some info. Some people just have a gene for this, I think. And I can't help thinking it might be because you have seen adversity yourself and you've had to deal with challenging situations yourself. And there's no part of me that would want to, as much as I'm sympathetic, go and help the Sahrawi people.
Well, exactly. Most people, their support for a cause ends on Facebook. Like,
yeah.
Maybe a token like here and there. The fact that you've done all this, it's like, it's kind of almost hard to relate to at times. The fact that it's such a selfless kind of endeavor.
How long was your shower when you got back from this desert? You must have been in the shower for a long time.
I was in the shower for a long time, and I sat and had my coffee in the bathroom, admiring the fact that I actually have a toilet. The fact that I have a bathroom.
It kind of puts everything into perspective, right?
Oh, my word. It was hectic.
Because they don't have running water.
There's no running water. There's no electricity. You do not have the pleasure of having a shower.
How long were you there?
I was there for 10 days.
Oh!
And it was the most unbelievable. Like, every morning I woke up and I was so grateful that I was still alive. You live in a tent in the desert sand, and you actually understand that, I mean, there is nothing. We live in homes where we've got 5 or 6 layers between you and the outside world. Yeah, there was nothing. It was just the elements, and you're very, very...
What is it? Very hot during the day and very cold at night?
Yes. Yes.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah, pretty much. And in summer, which is the June, July months, go up to about 55 degrees. And there's absolutely nothing that they can actually physically do.
So you can't go to Morocco ever again?
If you were invited, not until the Sahara, we have self-determination and independence.
You won't go, or you've been banned?
I can't go. I've been blacklisted.
Oh, but yes. You could try and get in.
I could, but, you know, my... it's not something I try to. I would never now, knowing what I know, Morocco is definitely not on my list of places to go. And
yeah, fuck Morocco. Say it.
You said it for me. Thank you. But the other thing is, when I was really young... And this is really for another show, but I found myself stuck in a human trafficking syndicate in North Africa. So for me...
What? No. You can't save this for another time. I want to hear this now.
So I got sold in Morocco.
You got
sold?
Sorry,
in Egypt. And
No. Back it up.
So
first of all, how old are you?
18.
What are you doing in Egypt at 18?
I went to...
To see the pyramids?
No. I did get to see them, but... I went to Egypt on a contract for modeling.
Oh, okay.
And when I got there, I was told that my passport wasn't stamped, and it wasn't when I arrived. So technically, I'm illegally in the country. They need to take my passport back to have all the paperwork done and the stamps, etc. So I said, no problem, and I gave it. And then days later, when I realized so many other people had got their passports back, and I started questioning where my passport was, I was told that... I mustn't worry, I'm not getting it back. And when they explained specifically to me why I wasn't getting it back, they told me I had been sold. And I mustn't worry, they're going to introduce me to where I'm going, who I'm going to live with, and who's bought me, etc.
What, some guy on a camel?
Some guy in a palace behind very high walls.
In
I'm sure
Cairo?
He has somewhere in the Middle East.
Oh my God.
And
did you start crying?
No, I started screaming and shouting and telling them, well... this is absolutely not going to happen. And when I started getting angry, that's when I was locked up. And the one thing I knew
in
was that...
In a police station? In a prison?
No. Inside the hotel sort of precinct that we were staying in. And the authorities were all involved. It's a huge international syndicate in crime. And
you were sold?
I knew I was going to die, but I knew I wasn't going to die behind a high wall. I was going to die trying to get home. And there was no way in hell that I was going to be somebody's possession.
And you had no means of communicating with your family or friends back here? 18 years old, you're out there to do some modeling, which already, you know, is a dodgy business because we know, like, young girls end up in terrible situations.
Absolutely.
You were sold to some Arab behind a high wall who was going to have you for a wife or a slave. And you're stuck in this hotel. You can't get out of this place.
Absolutely. And then I'm told...
So who's restraining you? Is some big burly man who runs the reception desk?
Pretty much. Jesus. But then I'm told that I have to go out and make an appearance on one specific day so that nobody thinks something's going on. And when they let me out, I wrote a note on a serviette and I gave it to a reporter that I knew was there. And he happened to be from CNN.
Wow.
And
what did you write in the note? Help me, I've been sold.
Pretty much. Something along those lines, and said to him that if he helped me, I'd give him
Find
the story.
Find out the price. Offer more. Look at you being sold into slavery.
And then I had to...
Who was the reporter?
For many reasons, he shall be unknown.
Oh, okay.
Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah.
Oh, actually something, you're nearly there. Uh-huh. And so he helped smuggle me out the desert through the Sinai. We got to Cairo.
You're joking. You're like, this is like the flight from Egypt. How did you get out of the hotel? Was it at night?
Did you have sheets tied together? It was about 2, 3 in the morning. No, I climbed out the toilet window. And then
thank God you weren't fat. You would have stayed enslaved.
Look, if I was thinner, it would have been a lot easier. But
wow.
Yeah. But
18 years old, and you're living like in one of the 1001 Arabian Nights stories.
It was very, very scary. And when I got to Cairo, I met two Filipinos who had been with me in the Sinai and had for some reason left early. And they were unhappy with what was going on, so they left. And I found them in the middle of Cairo, and they helped me. And before that trip, I never knew where the Philippines was. And it's strange how life works, because I went to the Philippines for the Miss Earth, and my life has taken me back to the Philippines at least once a year, every single year for the last 10 years.
So you got out of Egypt, and you came straight back home, and then you cried.
Yeah, oh yes. Then I cried probably for I'd like to say years, but... It was months and months.
Can you just stay out of the Arab world, if you don't mind? Just stay the hell out of there. What are you doing? You're looking for trouble.
That's why I won't go to Morocco and won't be going to Egypt anytime soon. One day I have to go back because I have to sort of face that place.
I want to find the guy who bought you.
Okay.
Aren't you curious who it is?
No, I don't want to know.
Don't you want to go in there and kick him in the balls?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because you can imagine how many other girls have been...
That's the thing. And I was so grateful that I was able to come home. And again, I got to come home. Other people don't. It's the same when I went now to Algeria. I got to come home. I got to go back home where I have a shower, I have a bathroom, I can open a fridge and there's food. These people don't get to go home. So that's why I feel like I have to do something.
Hey, listen, if any guys are listening now, this is the easy woman to please. She just wants she wants a shower and a running toilet, and she wants food in the fridge, and she's happy. As long as you don't own her, she's thrilled.
Exactly.
Wow, you could really make a very, very good... You're divorced, right?
Yes.
How long were you married?
Too long.
No, that's true for everybody, but come on.
So...
You've got a kid as well.
Yes, I have the most unbelievable little 5-year-old boy.
What's his name?
His name's Matthew. It's the light of my life. And he's absolutely, he's just amazing.
Are you going to sell him?
Oh, not not a chance.
5 years old, huh?
Yes, he's 5 years old and he has the willpower and bravery of something I've never seen before. He's just the most unbelievable little human being.
He's got to get that from you.
Oh, I'd love to take credit for that, but I think that comes from my mom. I really do. Him and my mom are the best of friends, and he just embodies so much of who she is.
What did your mother say when you got back from Egypt and you were almost sold?
She was devastated, and at that time, neither of my parents had a passport, and my dad couldn't really travel, but my mom didn't have a passport because she had never left South Africa. So what was she going to do? Firstly, she had to get a passport. Mm-hmm. Then to come to a country that...
But you couldn't leave your dad.
Absolutely.
Because he was ill.
So it was a really difficult time. And I think it was very stressful for her when when I was there, and there was no way to really communicate except sort of
haphazardly. Did she know something was wrong?
Yes. Well, so I did contact her and managed to let her know that something was wrong. When I got to Cairo, the people contacted her as well and told her that I've left and I've disappeared. And when they find me, they're going to lock me up and I'll disappear. No one will ever hear from me again.
They told your mother this?
Yes. And when she let me know that...
Where was Liam Neeson when you need him? Have you watched
those?
Have you watched those movies?
Nowhere. Absolutely. Did
those movies make you nervous?
Yes.
Maybe that's what the reporter did. The reporter didn't sell the story. He sold the movie rights.
Catherine, this is kind of terrifying that this happens in this day and age.
Absolutely.
That a young woman who's from South Africa, who's going over there naively, you expect everybody to be nice to you, think you're going over there on a contract to do some work, and there's some son of a bitch who buys people.
Absolutely. This is something that, you know, I wasn't the first or the last person that this happened to, and this continues to happen. Human trafficking is a huge business everywhere, and I think that, you know, I think young girls need to really re-look and reevaluate what it is that they want to do when they leave school, opportunities that come their way, people that are involved. All of these things are important, and we don't realize it when we're young and hopeful and sort of see a big, bright, shiny picture.
Yeah, it's not going to always be like that. So do you think you've because of these experiences, you've become maybe a little bit more wary, or at least even perhaps a bit jaded about human nature?
Definitely. I don't think you can go through these things and not be. But I try to keep perspective, and I've tried not to let some of the horrific experiences. Even my divorce was a horrific experience. So I really
it just got ugly and fights.
Absolutely.
And,
yes.
And was it over custody as well?
No.
There was no custody fight. No. He didn't even want. Oh, really? So you,
so,
Matthew's all yours. Well,
oh,
that's
absolutely.
A relief.
Absolutely. I'm.
Was it over money?
I realized I married the devil himself.
And wow.
Yes.
He was worse than the guy who bought you.
Oh, he was. That was child's play. Wow. That was child's play. But you know these things.
Oh my God! I'm surprised you don't hate men.
No, I have a brother and I have a father, and I have to know that not all men could possibly be that evil. And but I'm so lucky to
there must have been a point you were in love with this guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And you married him.
Absolutely.
You were married to him for a few years.
Absolutely.
How do things go so wrong?
You know, I think that I realized very quickly that you can be married to someone who you think you know, and people play an evil game, and people try to, I think once we were married, he believed he owned me. And
people just want to own you.
Yeah.
People are just trying to own you everywhere
but,
you go.
You know, the thing is that I think that in relationships, people don't realize that you have to still be an individual. Otherwise, it's just not going to
so
work.
Was he just completely smothering and jealous and impossible to live with?
Not even smothering, overpossessive.
Oh, right.
I think
so you couldn't go anywhere, you couldn't do anything.
Not a chance.
And for you, that would have been that would have been impossible,
horrible.
Right?
Eventually, I started not recognizing who I looked at in the mirror. And
was he a Greek?
He was South African. He was South African. But, you know, the thing is that somebody gave me a book while I was going through my divorce. And that book just resonates. And it was called Men, Snakes in Suits.
Snakes in Suits.
Yeah, absolutely.
So was he, I'm guessing he was a rich, powerful, successful guy.
Rich and powerful, not so much, but he was a lawyer. So nice. He really, really tried to destroy me going through a legal battle, but...
Oh, and you didn't obviously have a lot of resources
no,
to fight
absolutely.
With him.
But everything I had, I lost. But I got something that money can never, ever buy, and that's an amazing
freedom
child.
And your son.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm surprised that you are even able to be so balanced about human nature when you've been through things like this. Do you think that you can ever have a happy relationship? Are you in any relationships now?
I'm not in a relationship now. However, I have to believe that, you know, my sister recently got married, and
You were sitting at the back going, boo, get out of there, run. Run a million miles. He's going to try and own you.
He's such an amazing guy. And the thing is that these things happen in life. So I can't now label everything as bad.
She wasn't
and evil
throwing
and
confetti,
dark.
She was throwing lizards, frogs into a cauldron, saying, run, you crazy woman, while you can.
Yeah.
So you believe that there is still a space for love and like normal human relationships and all that kind of thing?
I do.
Even for you?
I don't know for me, but I know that these things exist. If I'm going to find someone who is able to actually understand that there's a bigger picture than the world that we currently live in.
You need someone pretty amazing. You'll need someone pretty
thank you. I
incredible.
Think so.
No, and he would have to be very patient with you because you've got your own thing going.
I think he'd also have to be very confident in who he is, because I think that he needs to have a space that he owns, in the sense that he's comfortable with where he's at, what he does, and who he is.
I know a guy.
That's important.
I know a guy. He's very comfortable with his own space. He owns what he has.
What are you talking about? Me? Oh, yeah, sure. That's all she needs in her life is another guy who's going to hurt her.
Come on, it's been a great interview so far. This is a great start point,
so
guys.
Hang on.
See it.
Now, let's get back to her. We can talk about this later. I'm not afraid. I'm not scared to go there. The deal is that it must be hard to be... To let your guard down.
It is, indeed. And I think that you're stupid if you think that you're not going to allow what's happened to you affect you. So if you think that, oh, it's happened, I've dealt with it, all that, that's fine. But if it doesn't change your perspective, something doesn't fit.
And you've got a kid. So it makes it harder because any guy is going to be with you.
I'm a package deal.
Right.
Yes.
He's going to have to be a dad to your kid as well, which is hard because a lot of people struggle with adoption, and that's not even, you know, that's because they want to adopt a kid, and sometimes it's hard to do. It's hard to work through that. So you're in an unenviable position. Have you maybe in some part of your mind resigned yourself to the fact that it's just going to be you and Matthew?
Yes, I have, and that's something that I've thought long and hard about, and I'm happy with that decision, or not that decision, but that possibility, because I've given everything I possibly can into building this human being that I believe will go out into the world and make a difference and have an impact. And
but
I continue doing what I'm doing.
But you've still got your whole life ahead of you too, so you want to reserve the right to change your mind.
Absolutely. So that's why I say it's not a decision, it's more the possibility of. I'm not closing my mind off to the fact that I will never get married again. I'll never have a bigger family. I'm not closing off to those things, but I'm also not being naive to think that I'm actually quite fine being on my own. I'm comfortable with who I am. And I think that a lot of people I know jump from being divorced straight into a relationship because they think that that's what defines them.
They need to.
Sensible woman, this Gareth.
She's very sensible.
Very sensible.
She's incredibly sensible. So don't you get really desperate for intimacy, though? I mean, don't you want a guy in the bed sometimes?
You know what I'm...
Or do you wake up every morning going, thank God I'm on my own? This is such... I'm so happy to not have to deal with other people's shit.
I do look at friends and people I know and look at the situation they find themselves in when they are in a relationship. And I think, oh my word, I really don't want that. But you do want to share... There are things you do want to share with someone else. You want to go to places. You want to experience certain things. You want to have
certain conversations. When was the last time you got some action?
Oh, no.
Come on. Level with me.
We are so not discussing
Come
this.
Come on.
How does this rate?
I need to know.
Gareth, leave this for the second date. Come
people
on.
Want to know. People want
people
to know.
People don't want
people
to know.
People care about
no,
this.
No, this is boring. This is boring.
No, I don't think it's boring. There's nothing boring about your life. Listen to this. Has anybody been bored? There's no one who's bored. People are intrigued. What is the worst of all these things that's happened to you? The divorce? Is that the worst?
Yeah.
That's worse than being sold.
Absolutely.
God, this man must be evil. I mean, if he's worse than being sold into slavery and worse than dwelling in the desert with a whole bunch of people in tents for 10 days in a row.
Yep.
That's worse. Got to be the most terrible human being that ever walked the earth.
Most probably is.
I didn't know that you dated Muammar Gaddafi. Wow. Does Matthew understand what his mom is doing when she leaves him here and goes into the desert for 10 days?
So I've really tried to explain to him. We have a huge map of the world. So whenever I've gone somewhere, I explain to him where I'm going and what I'm going to do there. So he knows parts of the map that I think people don't know that those countries even exist. Sure. And well, none of my family were happy that I was going to Algeria and going to Tindouf, where the refugee camps are. In fact, I got so much information from family members of horrific things that happened to people there. So it was really scary going. But Matthew understands that it's important to me and that I'm trying to do something that's going to leave a better world for him. And on some level, he does understand that. So if you ask him what I do, should make for a very interesting conversation. But sure. I really do try to incorporate sharing with him what I'm doing at a level that I would explain.
Are you going to give some lectures or presentations about what you saw in Algeria?
Absolutely.
Are you going to present this to people? Because I think a lot of people would be interested in this. Is there a way we can find out more apart from following you on Twitter?
So next week I'm busy writing if I can call it an opinion piece, specifically on my experience in the Sahrawi camps and on the Western Sahara, especially us celebrating Africa Month, who has actually sort of said, okay, well, we need to discuss the Sahrawi people. We need to discuss what is happening there. So absolutely. And I'm going to make sure that I speak to as many people. 54 and Bath are going to host a dinner for me tonight where I'll speak to a group of a small group of people. And I hope to be able to have platforms and go to as many places to speak specifically on this issue, because I think education and awareness is the biggest key to breaking the story wide open and getting more people to become passionate about this cause. Even if it ends on Facebook, at least they sharing the information with a group of people and their network.
Well, people are amazed by your story. I don't know how many people knew about this. I certainly didn't. It's almost like you're running for office. Is there a political ambition at all?
When I was little, and all my life, I grew up in a family that was very open-minded, very liberal in the way that they thought, and they shared with us how our country was evolving from a political perspective. And all I ever wanted to be was the first female president of South Africa. And so that's why I wanted to go and study law. I used to, as a schoolgirl, write letters to Madiba. He was obviously in office at the time. And after about a year of writing to him, I started getting responses. And after I got a box full of letters back from the presidency with this beautiful embossed Office of the President seal, for me, that was so inspiring and really motivated me to want to go into that space. My journey took me sort of in a different route, but one day I would definitely, for me to serve my country is something that is very important. So right now, absolutely not, but maybe one day if the opportunity does arise, it is absolutely something I
would
do.
Well, I've just got a message from the people in those tents in the Sahara. They say that they'd love you to be their president.
Well, if you fail
at being president here, you can always go and be president of the Sahrawi people.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Lead SA, what do you do with them?
Lead SA, I'm the Lead SA executive, so run the program for the Prime Media Group. Mm-hmm. And basically, the whole platform is to engage a mindset of active citizenship and to get people to, instead of ask who's doing what for me, what is it that you're doing for your community and for your where you are? So really trying to drive that messaging home.
Camilla says you're awesome. What an inspiring and together woman, and what a story.
Thank you.
Brian says, well done to Damon for organizing this guest. What an amazing person. Great interview from you.
Thank you.
Nice. Carla says I should ask you out. Then Mabel says, I'm surprised your kid's name is Matthew and not something in Arabic.
Definitely not. So Matthew means blessing, and he's definitely the blessing in my life. So, yeah.
And Henko says, I tuned in late, so I missed out who you're talking to, but I do want to know when last she had action. So give it to us. Give us the answer.
I'm absolutely not going to.
Come on,
that.
He's asking an earnest question.
No.
Is it? That's, okay, give me a ballpark figure. Somewhere in the last 6 months.
I'm absolutely not answering this question.
Come on, 6 months. It's a long time. You don't have to be specific. We're looking to your needs. Come on.
No, you're not breaking me on this one.
A year. Is it longer than a year? Are you as dry as the Sahara? You like Joan Rivers.
Gareth, she escaped human trafficking. She's going to evade this question with ease.
All right, I'm going to let you off. Only because I've got 10 minutes left of the show. You're amazing.
Thank you.
No, you really are. And this is a great story.
I truly appreciate that. And I honestly think it's so strange because when I was Miss Earth and sort of in the last 10 years of doing the work I've done, I've always wanted to be on your show, so it's truly an honor to be able to.
I just thought you were a beauty queen. Look at me. I've been wrong all along.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you so
Catherine
much.
Catherine Constantinides, and we can follow you on Twitter.
Yes, at Change Agent SA.
What is that all about? Change Agent SA.
I couldn't get Constantinides.
Well, it's also no one can spell Constantinides.
So I had to think of something.
You are an agent of change.
Exactly.
Okay. Very, very good. All right. Terrific. Nice to actually sit and talk to you about
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you.
What a fascinating life. All right. And good luck to you and Matthew.
Thank you so much.
Finding some guy who'll put up with you.
Exactly.
And please, can we try not to get owned again?
No, look, this is number one of goals in life.
There's no man who's going to own you.
Yes.
Good. I'm happy to hear
no
it.
No human.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
Thank
very
you
nice
so
to
much.
See you. It's CliffCentral.com.